We're thinking of Jesus. He's thinking of us. We're seeking to understand just a little bit more of his love, of what he's done for us upon the cross, as we break bread and take the cup together. And he longs to teach us more and to draw our hearts out in love and worship and adoration and commitment. We've got a couple of verses or a couple of phrases really from the book of Revelation. You'll have seen the title is The Scarred God. And there's a verse in Revelation chapter 13 verse 8. Fascinating verse. We won't take the whole verse, but there's a phrase in it that says, "The Lamb slain from the creation of the world." The Lamb slain from the creation of the world. There were 6 hours of the cross on Good Friday afternoon, and yes, those were dark hours. Yes, a man hung upon a cross and suffered physical, mental, spiritual pain. And those 6 hours were long, they were grievous, they were terrible. But if we think that the cross was just that, we haven't begun to realize the magnitude and the glory of the cross. Because here is a verse that says, "The Lamb was slain from the foundation of the world, before time began, the cross." And of course, we read another incredible passage in Revelation chapter 5, where, I'm ever so sorry, the NIV didn't get it right. "I saw a lamb," says John, and he doesn't say, "looking as if he had been slain." What John actually says, "I saw a lamb as slain. I saw a lamb," one translation, "with the marks of slaughter on," in other words, a cut throat, blood all the way down its front. A dead lamb, a slain lamb. Excuse me, arguing with the NIV, we know what it means, but, you know, if you see something in a shop window and it says, "as advertised," it doesn't mean that, well, let's pretend it has been advertised. It's as though it had been advertised. It really has been advertised. And when John says, "as slain," he means he really has been slain. And that's in heaven. That's after the resurrection. That's after the ascension. This is the eternal, risen, ascended, and glorified Christ. And he still has blood on him. He still has the marks of death on him. Those wounds yet visible above. In glory, in beauty glorified, no angel in the sky can fully bear that sight, but downward bends his burning eye at mysteries so bright. So we've got two things here. We've got the Bible telling us that the cross goes right back, the Lamb slain before the foundation of the world, and it didn't stop at 3 o'clock on Good Friday afternoon round about naught AD. It's still there. There is still blood on Jesus. There is blood on the throne of heaven. Our God still carries the marks of death. He still carries the scars. So the cross, you see, the cross is more than 6 hours. The cross goes right back before time began. And the cross continues forever. God always will be scarred. He always will bear the marks. I know he rose again from the dead. I know death was conquered. But when we say that the price has been paid, we do not mean that the money has been refunded. The cost of the cross continues. God still carries the price that had to be paid. He still has the marks of what it took to save the world. Something pretty big. So when Jesus says, I want you to look at my broken body, I want you to look at my shed blood, he's talking about something very, very big. Something very, very real. Something that is eternal. You see, God didn't kind of create the world and think, hey, that's a nice world, great. And then things went a bit wrong and God said, oh dear, what a pity. Sometime I must do something about that. But didn't do anything about it for a very long time. Things went from bad to worse and so on. And in the end, God said, well, perhaps I'll go down and do something to sort it out. Okay, so for 30 years he came and did a few things to sort it out and then died upon the cross. Yeah, for 6 hours he suffered. And then it was all over and he went back to heaven and everything lived happily ever after. That's such an inadequate way of seeing it, isn't it? Sometimes we thought of that. We thought, well, God is up there and he lives in unending bliss. And yes, apart from that short time while he was on earth suffering, he doesn't really know what it's like. You see, the real story, the real way of looking at it is more like this. God decided to create the world, the universe, and he decided to put in this universe that he was going to create beings that could love him, beings that could know him, beings that could respond to him in a relationship, in a God-like relationship of commitment and obedience and love and service. But when he decided to do that, he knew what it would cost him. Because he knew that giving that freedom to these great angelic beings, to these human beings that he put on planet Earth, and to other beings that he may have put in other parts of his universe, I don't know. But the price of giving us that openness, that freedom, would be evil and sin, would be the coming of darkness into the brilliant light of God's creation. It would be pain for our God, because our God is holy, and anything that is evil causes God pain. There's an amazing verse in Genesis 6, verse 6, right at the beginning of the Bible. God looked and saw what a mess the world was in, and his heart was filled with pain. In fact, you could quite easily translate it, and his heart was broken. Right back in Genesis chapter 6. The brokenness of the world broke the heart of God. And he knew what it would cost him. He had two choices. He said, I can choose not to create this universe. Create other universes where everybody does everything exactly as they should, where there aren't any free creatures. It's just trees and stones and things like that. I could create that sort of universe. And maybe he has created lots of universes like that. I don't know. But in choosing to create a universe in which people could choose to obey or to disobey, choose to love or to hate, choose to follow or spit in his face, he knew he would have to pay the price. And that price was the cross. You see, evil is not a small, trivial thing. Great atheist philosopher Jean-Paul Sartre lived through the Second World War. And there's a famous passage in one of his books, and it goes something like this. He said, during that time, we heard whole streets screaming in pain. And we knew one thing without doubt, that evil was not redeemable. One day, more lofty souls might hope that we'd be able to look back and say, all that pain, all that suffering, oh yes, well, it's been outweighed by the good things that have happened since. But he said, when we lived through those dark days, we knew that it could never happen. Evil is so terrible, suffering is so terrible, pain is so suffering, is so terrible, darkness is so terrible. No amount of light, no amount of joy, no amount of goodness can ever outweigh it. There's too much of it. And he was right. Because he was an atheist. There's nothing in this world that can counterbalance the darkness, the sin, the evil. But there is something outside of this world, and that is God. The atheists, there is no answer. But the Bible tells us that God is big enough. Nobody else could open the scroll and put into effect God's purposes of love and grace and hope for a broken world. Nobody else could do it. But Jesus. Sin is big, evil is big, suffering is big, pain is big, but God is bigger. And what he has done on the cross is something huge, something glorious. Right from the beginning, before the foundation of the world, this great heart of this great God has taken upon himself the suffering and the pain and the darkness and the sin of this world. And he has carried it. And in a sense, still he carries it. The marks of death are still upon him. This is our God. I want to give you two words. Two words arising from that. Both of them beginning with S, and I hope you can remember them. The first is sufficiency. Sufficiency. What God has done for us on the cross. You see, sometimes people say, well, how can what happened on a Friday afternoon right about AD 30 make any difference to me here and now? Why should one man dying affect me? Why can it deal with my sin, my life, the mess that I'm in and the mess that the world is in now? Well, maybe if that's all it is, one man dying on a cross 2,000 years ago. But glory to God, it's bigger than that. You see, it's sufficient because it is so big. The sufficiency of the cross. The sufficiency to deal with evil. To break its power. To forgive sin, to take the burden and to take it right away so that we can know we have been forgiven. Because God has borne it from before the beginning of time and right through the ages until the end of time and after the end of time. God has carried and dealt with my sin. And God is strong. And God's shoulders are broad. And he has done what needed to be done, that I can be forgiven, that my salvation, my redemption can be accomplished. This is what God has done, and it's big. Sufficient. Sufficient to cope with any situation. We look at the world and we say, what a mess. You know, how can God cope with that? God knew from before the foundation of the world. God knew each situation. God knew the Holocaust. God knew the tragedies that have come into your life and my life. God knew the things that we've watched on our television screens. God knew it from before the foundation of the world. And he said, I must do something that is sufficient for that. The children who starve to death. The hatred and the evil in the hearts of men and women throughout the world, the selfish indulgence of the Western world. Something that's big enough. He knew what was needed, and what he has provided is sufficient. An answer big enough. Sufficiency. A second word, also beginning with S. Security. Security. With a salvation like that, we can have security, we can have peace. If it was a little bit of a salvation, if it was perhaps, maybe, we might be justified in being uncertain. Did what happened in AD 30 on a hill outside Jerusalem, did it make any difference? Can I really have peace? Can I really be secure? But if, as the Bible tells us, this is something that God has accomplished, that the great Creator God, in his unfathomable purposes of wisdom and love and grace, he has been working this out from before the foundation of the world, and he is continuing to work it out, and Jesus is still there on the throne of heaven, and he shows his scars, and he intercedes for us, then we can say, I'm safe, I'm secure, I can know, I can have confidence. What God has done is big enough for me. I don't need to be afraid. My faith is small. My faith may waver. My faith may struggle. My life may sometimes sink down into sin. I may fail. I may fall. And if it depended on my faith, if it depended upon my goodness, what chance would I have? But if it depends upon the eternal purposes of an all-wise God, working out his purposes from before the beginning of the world right through to the end of the ages, then I can say, I can be sure. I can have security. I can have peace. Those great words of Jesus, your sins are forgiven. Go in peace. This is what God has done. And this is what Jesus says. I want you to remember. I want you to remember the cross in all its fullness. What it has done. How it has brought salvation and light and life. How it has brought the glory of God. How it has dealt with all that is evil and sin, how it has turned the darkest into the most brilliant. This glorious, glorious promise of God that all things will work together for good to those who love him, who are called according to his purpose. Again, if you've got a little God who's struggling with the world, God saying, I wish I could do something. This terrible mess the world's in, but there's nothing really that I can do. If you've got that sort of God, then you don't have the security. But if you have a God who's known what he's doing and is working out his purposes of grace and salvation through the cross from before the beginning of the world through the ages till the end of everything, then you can say, in God I trust. This is a God on whom I can build my life. I can go, I can face any situation. I can face the darkness of the world. I can face the situations, the dark valleys that I have to go through, the kind of things we're talking about this morning. I can face my own sin and my own failure. And I can know that what God has done is big enough, sufficient and secure. Sufficiency and security. So Jesus invites us and he says, come, my brothers and my sisters, sons and daughters of the living God, come now and remember what I've done for you. Remember the breadth and the height and the depth and the length of my love. What it cost me, everything. What it means to you, everything. What it has done with evil, all what needs to be done to break its power and to set you free, everything. Come, take this bread and wine in remembrance of me.